The following podcast is sort of kind of funny.
And for adults, listener discretion is advised.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to another bonus episode of the Going There podcast season 2. As you can see, the season is upon us. I've decorated for Christmas. I'm wearing my ugly Christmas sweater. And magic is in the air because sometimes when one podcast likes another podcast, they come together and create something very special, very magical. I'm your host, Matt, and this is the Going There podcast.
God rest ye merry gentlemen, because we're going there. Taboo topics are back on the table.
So joining us now is the brother-sister podcast duo, James and Lauren. Thanks so much for joining us, guys.
Hi, thanks for having us. We're so excited to be here.
We're so excited to be here, and this is going to be a grand old time. I'm so excited.
A grand old time.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. That's how we're actually going to market this episode, so I appreciate that. So we have to start with the obvious question, and that is, what's it like to do a podcast with your sibling? You guys are not your average sibling duo, because if I had a podcast with any one of my four siblings, it wouldn't even make it through one episode. There would be murder. There would be family splits, bloodshed. Yeah. What's it like? And you guys aren't in the same place. So you live in different states, but there's still some of that, you know, they say don't work with family. Don't do a podcast with family.
And we're like both, actually.
Right. And originally, we are from the same place, our mother's womb. We exited a couple of years apart, but it was, I mean...
But we think back on that with fond memories, I think.
Right. It was a smooth delivery. But we've been close since birth. I mean, since he was born, because I'm older. But we've had a lot of fun growing up, and so doing this, we've had a blast, actually. We didn't realize how uncommon it was that we get along so well. We've been on different podcasts, and we've had similar people saying, like, I could never record with my siblings, or I'd kill them. And I don't know, James, what do you think? Do you hate me?
Yeah, well, I do, but I think that adds a little spice to the episodes. Oh. I think that you said something a little bit interesting earlier when you said that we're not a normal sibling duo. I think we're better than most people in general. Most siblings. Yeah, Lauren and I were very close as kids. And then also in high school, we hung out all the time.
And very weird.
Very weird, which, again, didn't realize was not normal. And then it just made sense that with how funny we are to just release that insanity into the world weekly on a podcast.
On a platform for people to be like, good God, they won't shut up.
Yeah, they won't stop singing ever. Horribly, I might add, but they won't stop.
Yeah.
And it's so been fun. So what you guys are getting a taste of right now is what their show is all about. It's the it's the two of them just kind of going back and forth and, you know, a lot of tongue in cheek. Tell our audience a little bit about your show.
Right, James, do you want to?
Yeah, so our show, originally the concept was I messaged Lauren a while back and was like, hey, I think we should do a podcast because I love podcasts and I love comedy. And Lauren goes, that's a good idea. Let me start one without you. And I said, okay.
Yeah.
And she did. And then I think I was like the second or third episode as a guest.
It was second. Then, it was immediately.
Yeah. And then Lauren realized her mistake immediately and invited me to come on.
Yeah. And so James is also a liar. You can track back and see. I texted him thinking of doing a podcast. No. And he's like, oh, I do. Absolutely, dude.
Okay.
I had pictures lined up. Anyway, it is neither here nor there. We are in the present, which is now it was, it started off as She's Kind of Funny, became sort of kind of funny. We wanted to merge that. It's been
great. Yeah. And now we're just, we market as like,
what do we comedy. Do? What's our podcast about?
Yeah. So comedy podcast, the majority of the time we will read people's like story entries and like react to them and kind of like, you know, like you said, tongue in cheek, talk about funny stuff from that. Almost never do we stay on the topic though. So if you are like a very
structured,
you're looking for like a, I want a structured, very intelligent learning driven podcast. We are not your podcast, but
you were in the right place.
You're in the right place though. You will laugh. I will tell you that. you'll learn something.
Matt's podcast is the right place.
This is the right place. Matt knows what's up.
You haven't watched all of our episodes. Yeah. No, I mean, it's hard to keep people on track, but let's be honest. I mean, something's been in the water for a while. We're all ADHD. So it's probably easier for your average person these days to follow your conversations, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I will say our whole theme of the not so family friendly comedy podcast with your siblings, it's for that kind of crass, little bit inappropriate humor. But it's fun. Like it's all around kind of like you're with your siblings and the siblings that you like, and you just talk about funny stories. So
we just want people to feel like they're hanging out with us. You know what I mean? Right. And so that's kind of the vibe we want to give off. And I feel like we've done a pretty good job. Most people kind of, the most common thing I feel like that happens is friends will text us and be like, oh, I'm sorry, I haven't talked to you in 6 months. I forgot we haven't been hanging out because I listen to you every single week and you just, it feels like we've been hanging out. I'm like, well, thank you. But also I've missed you and I'm sorry that I haven't been able to talk to you.
Right.
But thank you for your stream. So yeah.
That is an odd experience. I've experienced it myself with friends, colleagues, family. Mm-hmm. And like the initial reaction for me is usually like, oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much. And then you walk away and you're like, no, this kind of sucks. This is a one-way communication device.
Yeah.
Like you have now seen me naked and I know nothing about what you've been up to for the last 6 months.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a double-edged sword to say the least.
Yeah.
Do you ever get people who you ruffle some feathers or, you know, I've gotten texts from my mom where it's like, why did you say that? We didn't do that to you. you guys are very candid about your family, your upbringing, your friends, all that stuff. Do you get people who reach out and are like, what the fuck? Why are you calling me out on your podcast?
Usually the crazy stories that are being told, believe it or not, are coming from my end, not so much Lauren's.
Right.
And we try to obviously not like say, oh, my friend, and then use someone's name. But people obviously know when we're talking about them because it's like, oh, that was obviously my story.
We never say timeline. It's very...
It's like one time
this happened. A few years ago, it could have been yesterday.
Uh-huh.
You know?
So I've had people that I was... I had gone out with reach out to me and be like, so when did this happen? And I was like, a long time ago. It wasn't, but but because we don't put a time frame on things, it could have been, you know, a day ago or anything like that. As far as like parents, I don't really feel like any negative backlash, but we have had some like, well, maybe you guys should try to market to a little bit of a different like generation of people. And they were like, you know, that's funny, except you listen to us and think it's funny. So like, obviously we're doing something correct. So,
right.
Yeah. We've had our dad just be like, like our generation. So they're 50s. So it's like, you know, he's saying this, he'll be like, ideally it's not targeted to our audience. And we're like, well, we know that, like,
that's,
you know,
the point. Yeah.
but our parents do listen, and we haven't had really negative things come from that end. I've had people reach out. I actually had on the very first episode, I haven't had really negative things. The very first episode, I was joking saying like, it was about breakups. And I was like, you know, my high school boyfriend and I, like, we never broke up. It was just like, okay, bye, we're going to college. And I was like, should I tell him I'm married? Should I tell him I'm pregnant? Like, it was a whole thing. I got a message. I didn't talk to him in like 10 years. It was hilarious. He messaged me and was just like, you're good. You can tell your husband we're broken up. I'm engaged. It was funny. It was like very lighthearted. And it's kind of funny for people to come out of the woodworks and be like, oh my gosh, I haven't talked to you forever.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but we've had some odd things as far as like,
I think religious,
very religious.
Yeah.
And that has been a little different.
Yeah.
Well, you are on the right show because we're all about talking about that uncomfortable stuff with religion. You guys have a unique story, and it's not actually how I was introduced to you guys. So we were connected through AJ Scales at AJ Presents the Greater Good. And
we love you, AJ.
But you guys have a unique story. So you're James, you're still near where you grew up, right? In
No, so I live in Utah now. We claim Mississippi as our home. Yeah, we
The
did live
longest
in
place we
Utah.
lived, yeah.
Yeah, the longest place we lived was Mississippi. We did live in Utah at one point when we were younger, but not for very long. And I live in Utah now, so.
You're on the right track with the whole Mormonism thing.
Yeah.
You're right up that alley.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that. What was your experience and why are you guys, God, I hate to say the word normal. Why are you guys podcasters now who aren't podcasting for Joseph Smith?
Yeah. I did the whole podcasting for Joseph Smith for 2 years, not necessarily podcasting. I was a missionary, so I think I've done enough of that for my life. Yeah, we grew up Mormon. We were LDS until 2 years ago for you, Lauren, 3 years
Yeah.
ago for me, almost four now. And I wouldn't use the word normal in any aspect when you're talking
Absolutely
about
not.
this family, but yeah, it's been a wild ride, especially living in Utah, because there are Mormons everywhere, and I kind of do fit that mold of like I look very like, hi, I'm Mormon, but I'm not. And so it's been
Right.
kind of interesting.
But it's weird too when you grow up. We kind of spoke about this, Matt. In a high, ours was a high demand religion. It's always seared in your brain, like, your childhood. You can't eliminate things. It's kind of deprogramming. There's always a part of that that's in us a little bit. So it's like when James is around all these members of this church, I'm sure it feels like home. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Like it's very interesting. But yeah, we've been out a few years now. But it was funny. Like giving you a scale of how Mormon we were. I was listening to Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat soundtrack. I love musical theater, you guys. So I was listening to it, jamming out. My kids are screaming. And I'm like, did you ever watch this to my husband? And he's like, no, not really. And I was like,
He's
did you
like,
watch
we were
this?
Mormons, you were Mormons.
Yeah. I was like, this, I'm plugging like Sons of Provo. I know no one will know that is. That is a Mormon. Gosh, movie, it's hilarious, but it will not make sense to anyone. And
It's
then Prince of
like
Egypt
movies made by Mormons
from
for
for
Mormons. It's
Mormon.
like,
It's
if you know what
so,
Bible Man is,
it's a
like that
lot.
kind of stuff.
Yes.
Oh, no, actually, I know
You know Bible
Bible
Man?
Man. Yeah, I know Bible
Yeah.
Man.
It's
Yeah.
Bible
Yeah.
Man. We had some Catholic friends that introduced us to Bible Man.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we would listen to, I was like, we would watch one of these movies every Sunday. Like
Yeah.
every Sunday, and he's like, "You were super Mormon." I'm like, "Oh, we for sure." So yeah,
Yeah.
we were very, we loved it.
Indoctrinated.
We loved it too.
Yeah.
I mean, James did too. Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
So where was the tipping point? What happened?
The tipping point for me was learning the true history of the church that the church does not tell you about. You are painted this very Disney-fied version of the history of the church and these early saints and or prophets, and a lot of members now, apologists like to say, oh, well, you can't teach stuff like that to children, soften it a little bit. But I'm like, right, but they also don't teach that to the adults. Like,
Yeah.
as an adult, as a 20-year-old, 23-year-old woman, I did not know the true history. A lot of members still to this day don't know. So I learned some really horrific things, and it
Truths.
really upset me. And it's not just like, oh, this guy was not a good person. It's like, oh, also, that means he wasn't honest, which means he could be making so much of this up, So you learn things like that. And that was kind of my tipping point. There were some other things with personal beliefs. James and I say this a lot on ours, but we are very LGBTQ loving. We accept, we love that community. And you, they're most religion, they're not, they don't really support that. And
Yeah.
so the social issues and then actual the true truth claims of the church
So
is what
like
triggered
I'm
me.
allowed to have like five wives and bang them all, but you wives
Right.
better not be touching.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean,
Polygamy. Yep.
the hypocrisy in that's kind of funny, but anyway, that's all
Yeah, no, you
religion.
nailed it. You nailed
Yeah.
it.
As
And a
did
12-year-old
Joseph
wife,
Smith.
too.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, a
He nailed a
12-year-old
lot of
wife.
people.
So it's
Yeah.
like,
Yeah.
that's wrong. Yeah. Yeah, that's fun. James, do you
Yeah, so I actually was the first person in our family to leave the church. I left in 2020. I don't remember if it was the fall of 2019. I believe it was something like that. I took a class. I was at BYU, which is like the Mormon university. If colleges, everyone knows BYU. And so I was there. I was taking classes, and at BYU, you have to take religion classes if you go there. Like it doesn't matter if you're Mormon or not. it is part of the curriculum like to Book graduate. Like a Book of Mormon, they will teach you like, and they don't teach it like, hey, this is our beliefs. This is what we believe in. It's, this is the truth.
This is history.
This is history, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like teaching the history. I'm doing air quotes if you are listening to this. This is the history of the Americas, right? Like this is where humans came from that live here. This is how apparently like steel was made here and just stuff that like doesn't make any sense according to historians, but they teach it as if it's fact.
Well, I was going to add in real quick.
Yeah.
The thing that fights any kind of like cult, any kind of fear, any kind of like bad religion is always information. You know, like going to college and, you know, my parents' generation, like they're the ones who are like, all colleges are trying to brainwash the kids and make them democratic liberals. And it's like, in fact, I was way more conservative than your average person at a very pretty liberal college, but both my parents, at least my dad had went there for a little bit. So like, it was like considered liberal. But like, it wasn't that they indoctrinated me. They taught me information that shortly thereafter, when this doesn't quite line up with this, like the false history of religions, they don't realize how much that works against them.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like it's easy when you say this happened 2000 years ago, but when you say the earth is only 5,000 years old or you try to add into 6, these facts,
or the entire world flooded and you're like, well, there's actually evidence that doesn't, that proves that wrong. There was, the whole world was never flooded. And they're like, but it was okay.
Like how did we get rainwater before that? Oh, well, it came up from the ground because God decided science didn't exist yet either.
Sure.
And of course, evolution. This was around the time that Jesus was riding around on a velociraptor in Missouri.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Talking
where
to
Adam
the
and
natives.
Eve lived. Humans didn't evolve from Africa. Apparently it was in Missouri.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, and of course, like the idea of religion is supposed to be about faith and spirituality. Like, you know, you're willing to, you know, you're
trust.
Willing, yeah, you're willing to like go a little bit on faith, like the Christmas season. Do I really think Christmas is magical? No, it's usually shitty. But like, you go on a little bit of faith, hoping like maybe this year will be better.
Maybe this
like,
year.
We all toast. We all toast and watch the ball drop on New Year's Eve every year, hoping this is going to be a better year. Like, I don't.
This is our year.
Yeah, like I think it's great when people have faith beyond what they can prove. But when you can disprove something,
that's where the issue falls in.
That's our issue. Yeah.
100% I agree with you.
When science can back it up, then you should, I mean, hopefully agree with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I always like to say on our show that what religion, and I don't mean spirituality, I mean, you know, this organized brainwashing type machine that is religion, especially in a capitalist society where they're, you know, it's a dollar printing machine. What it does that's, you know, beyond all the horrible physical and effectual things that it does is it snuffs out curiosity. And curiosity is like the one thing that I think makes life beautiful and interesting.
Yeah.
Like we're podcasters because we're curious and people listen to you because they're curious. Yeah. And it's not just about like, I want to learn something new, but, oh, I wonder what this person is going to say today. Oh, I wonder what other people think about this. Am I not alone? Religion tells you, oh, you're alone. There's only like 10 of us. And you want to buy a ticket into heaven? We got it, but you got to go to Missouri or you got to go to Kentucky and hop on the ark. Like whenever, like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So like,
it's like us against them mentality.
It's the victim mentality. And that's what keeps cults and high demand religions secure. You know, it's like you're isolated, you're alienated. It's all right there in the bite model. I know you talked about that on your, on your episode.
Many a time. That's right. I know you checked out the cult episode. What'd you think about it? Does it start to get triggering or is it more just interesting?
I've always thought cults were interesting, but I didn't fully understand until I left how really they're the same. Like they're just copy paste little tweaks here and there. It wasn't triggering for me. What's more triggering is, I don't know if you saw Keep Sweet, Pray and Obey on Netflix, when it's very curated to Mormon. That's really upsetting to me. But other things, what I think is fascinating is I'm like, oh, that cult leader was like mine. Like it's just all this, you know, it's fascinating. Like brainwashing is, it's wild. It's wild.
Yeah.
And trauma bonding is real. I mean, there's, you know, the three of us were talking and I only knew a little bit about the Mormon stuff. And, you know, 20 minutes later, we're like knee deep in that conversation the first time we chatted. And it's just because
immediate friends.
Yeah. And it's just because it's like, we don't have to, with other people, you have to like go back and start the story at square one with anyone else who's been through something, regardless of the degree. It's like, oh, we already get it. So we can pick up on page like 25 and
stuff. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even it can be the same, but just tweaked, you know? And so it's like, oh, that's yours. This is mine.
It's like, oh, you guys called it like thetans or whatever. We called it this. And like, oh, you call it, it's the same thing. You just have to find the verbiage. Cause again, cults love just making shit up and calling
it. They like their own words. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
James, I cut you off earlier, but you're at college. You're starting to see, you know, you're just now becoming a man, right? You're just now becoming an adult, and you're starting to see that there's some things that don't line up. And was there like a turning point in all of this?
Yeah. So for me, I took this class. It was a religion class, air quotes. Like, this is like, oh, this is truth. And they were explaining essentially the history of the Mormon church through their eyes, right? Like, oh, this is what's true. And they're like trying to explain away the bad things that the church had done, or like the I guess we'll call it bad things. And it was like, oh, it's because like of this, or like questions people have. And the answers that they were giving, and again, this is like university level funding that they have to like to explain these things, were like horrendous explanations. Like explanations that didn't add up. Like 1 + 1 = 1,000, not even 3. It's not off by a little bit, it's off by like a crazy amount. And I just remember specifically learning that like there's in the specific thing for me is in the Mormon church, there's this book called the Book of Abraham, right? And the long story short is that Joseph Smith bought some papyrus from like these people that were traveling, selling like Egyptian stuff. Like at the time, America, like everyone was obsessed with ancient Egypt because they'd started opening up the coffins and all these things, and they were like pulling stuff out and then just selling it. So he bought one and was like, oh, I can read this, because this is known as not Egyptian, Reformed Egyptian, which is the language that the people in America wrote in, because blah, 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 right? Again, not true. And he tells the story of
Abraham from the
Abraham,
Bible.
Thank you. Abraham in the Bible. And if you look up Isaac, if you look up the Book of Abraham, like just Google it, it will, and like papyrus, I think it's a papyrus, the papyrus that they came
like
on.
Hieroglyphics and
stuff. Yeah, hieroglyphics. You will see it. And if you know the story of Abraham trying to kill his son, like, and the angel stops him, it looks just like it. I mean, truly, you can see where he got this from, right? But then the Rosetta Stone came out a couple of years later, and they were able to actually translate, they started to be able to actually translate the Egyptian hieroglyphs. And they're like, well, none of that is what it's talking about. It's talking about, I think, like the embalming ceremony.
It's a funerary text.
Yeah, it's a funerary text. Yeah. And it has nothing to do with the Bible, like nothing at all. Like, why would they even be talking about, you know, stuff that happened in ancient Israel or whatever, right? And so,
So it just directly disproved. But that's the thing they don't teach you. Like, you still study from the Book of Abraham as if it is this whole text that he's translated, pulled it out of his ass.
But
it's incredible.
Yeah. And then the worst part about it is that's not even the end of it. They go, okay, well, we're going to explain. I'm like, oh, so it's already bullshit. And now they're going to be like, but we can explain this. And I'm like, all right, please do. And the two explanations that they gave me were like, this is a professor, like he gets paid really good money to teach this class. And he's like, one is that it is Reformed Egyptian, and that when we read it through the eyes of the Lord, it just says something different. Okay, well, what? Or that Joseph Smith, when he read this, he didn't actually,
this is my favorite,
actually translate it. The Lord just gave him revelation, and he wrote down what God needed him to write down
through that text,
through that paper. And I'm like, that's super cool, except for the fact that he directly said, I translated this verbatim and this is what it says, except for that little detail. That is a big issue. So that, to me, I remember, was the class period. I called my dad and I was like, what the fuck is this? And he's like, yeah, no explanation for me. I'm like, oh, fuck me. Like, this is crazy, right? So
we found out a couple of years ago, our dad was having a faith crisis as well, learned that, had to put that
this
in.
This is like 06. Yeah, like this is like years ago. that he had.
So
that.
It's so fun.
Yeah, stuff like that. Mountain Meadows Massacre, just to name a couple things. You can just Google these things if you would like to learn about the Mormon history, the church. Again, the polygamy, not the church's teaching of it, because the church is like, oh, at that time it was normal to marry a 14-year-old. False. Not at all true.
Like, it was 2001. What did we know? You know?
What did
like,
we know?
Yeah.
You're wrong.
They're yeah. Like, and the modern Mormon church, they don't practice like openly polygamy, but they still believe in polygamy post death. Like that you can have multiple
you could
wives.
Still, right. So if you were sealed to your husband in the temple,
which
and
is
then
like Mormon marriage,
right. You're married in the temple and the wife dies. The husband can then remarry in the temple, but his wife still stays his wife in the afterlife. But this is the fun part, like
here
you were saying earlier.
Feminists,
if my husband dies, get ready. If my husband dies, I cannot remarry.
Yeah, nor
he
should you.
He can collect his wives, right? But I need to shut up.
Yeah.
So so that is, people say they don't still practice polygamy. They don't, but they do.
No, they
and
do.
They think in the afterlife, it still works like that.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's very archaic.
Just to name a few things.
Yeah, so. The worst thing they could have done was in elementary school, we had a class that started teaching us logic.
Yeah.
And so logic is applied to mathematics, to history, to just any kind of like factual data. And, you know, so people would say stuff like that, like, well, actually, Joseph Smith could read it and I'm like, well, then by that means he could have been lying, right? Because man is, well, yeah, but God said, well, how do you know God said? Because if he wrote it, so then you get to this point where there becomes a paradox, and somebody with the ability to critically think and analyze has to either make the choice to be blissfully ignorant and say, I'm just not going to question it.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't make sense, but I'm not going to think about it. Or they go, oh yeah, that doesn't make sense. And so I had this long conversation with my mom a long time ago, and I kept like fighting each thing. I'm like, well, then this could be this. And she got to the last point. I'm like, boil it down. What is the one thing that is true that there is no question about it in your mind that you hold everything else to? And it's like that God, you know, created us and God loves us. And I said, well, then how could that God who created all of us, not just the people who go to church and put on a pretty thing and put money in the basket, but created that guy down the street who you say is living in sin because he's homosexual. How could that guy, I go, by logic, that doesn't make any sense. And what it made me realize is religion, the difference between spirituality and religion is the loss of all logic and connection to reality.
Yeah.
Like you cannot question your surroundings, your relationships, the way the world works, history. All of it does not matter because it's almost like you're living in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but instead of superheroes, it's Joseph Smith and all these other crazies, right?
Yeah, and these prophets.
Oh, Ron Hubbard.
And like making the water split. I mean, that's the thing, is I remember thinking prophets were like the coolest superheroes because I'm like, this dude fucking calmed down. He called fire from the sky. He brought death to like the Egyptians. I mean, Moses
to the firstborn.
Fucking...
Isn't that like the coolest
beautiful.
Thing?
Yeah. Yeah, and then you realize they were just like the slyest con men of their time for the most part. How can we make a buck? I bet you I can get some people to believe some wacky shit. You know, like it starts with, do you think you get your brother to eat this worm? And then it goes to, do you think you get your brother to marry 14 women and then murder all of them? And then and then
he's
worship
not
me?
Not about it.
Not even. Yeah. Yep.
I will eternally, unless I die and there's nothing after this life, and that's possible, be grateful to our dad, Lauren and my dad. He was the
and
person
mom.
And mom, but I'm specifically talking about my dad because he was the person that always said, question everything. Like, I just always remember this is something that my younger brother and I talk about. He lives in Utah, so we talk all the time about this kind of stuff. And he's like, dad always told us to question everything, and you'll always learn something new. You'll always have better knowledge about everything, and you'll always be able to either prove things or disprove them, and then you can make a better educated guess on whatever you're doing in life. And this was when he was like very active Mormon, like super active, right? And it was just always question everything, and then everything will work out because you can prove it, right? And because of that, the critical thinking that he engraved in us since I can literally even remember in my life, like just anything, it turned to a point where I was like, my dad will not be upset with me by making this decision, specifically with leaving the Mormon church, because I'm making a logical decision and this doesn't make any logical sense. Which is the same reason why our parents ended up leaving the church. It doesn't make sense. And you can't always make decisions based off emotion, because if you do, you're going to feel guilty. Like, we were ingrained since birth that we're going to, even to this day, knowing that it's not true, sometimes we feel bad. We go like, you know, God, I hope it's not fucking, that we're not wrong. But we know we're not wrong, but we still feel that innate awfulness about leaving religion. You know what
I mean?
It'll
never leave.
Yeah. It'll never leave. You're still going to be fighting these demons and these falsities and all of that. Uh-huh. But like, it gets easier. Joking about it helps a lot.
Yes. Yes. And 100%.
Yeah. And commiserating obviously is a great way.
Yeah.
And to be clear too. So I know a lot of times people see things in black and white, you know, like, I love my parents. They've been as supportive as they are capable of being in my podcast, in my spiritual journey and everything. They will never be able to see the world that the way that I see it. Because again, like you said, it is ingrained in you from so young. It is just a fact of life. You do not question God.
Yeah.
God has the ability to snuff you out at any moment, and he's done it lots of times.
Yeah. It's like, look at the Bible. It says,
don't ask Lot's wife.
Thousands and thousands of times he wiped the earth.
Yeah.
The most earth times. Because people were questioning him.
So I guarantee you, my parents question these things all the time, but I think it's one of those, dare I really question this?
Right. Yeah. So, and that's the thing for anyone who's listening that listens to your podcast, like, no, again, this is not my podcast, but you're not alone, and it's okay to have these feelings. And there are millions of people out there just like you, and you are valid in what you're thinking. Whoever's listening to this that needed to hear that, I truly hope that you feel connected with that idea. So
yeah, all five of you, you can email me after the show.
Yeah, for sure. Send it. shoot me a text message.
We've seen your awards.
Yeah.
Well, like good religious leaders, I know how to pay off the right people too.
There it is.
Yeah, so
tax exemption.
What still pops in your head? Like, I still noticed something the other day, and I'll try to remember what it was, where I'm like, oh fuck. Like that is still in there. Almost like thinking, what should I bake for Santa this year?
Yeah.
He really likes these cookies. Like, wait, that's still in there?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it was, but it was religion based. And I'm like, you know, it's
the same thing.
Yeah. It wasn't a conscious thought, but it's like, oh my God, like, holy shit.
And then you have to check yourself. You're like, wait,
do you guys, I'm sure since you guys, it's still pretty new. Do you guys still have those things? Like you mentioned a minute ago, James, like, there's still the idea of, oh shit, what if I was wrong and the afterlife that they taught me is real? Yeah. Like, I'm fucked.
Yeah.
So I have little kids, and one of them, we were still members when he was 3, 4. So he still remembers some of the stuff, and I have tremendous guilt for doing what I was taught to, you know, it just, yeah. So he'll say things, and this is not really what you asked. I'm sorry, but, things will come up through him asking, and I'm like, oh my gosh, how do I mold this little mind when I wasn't raised like this? I don't know what I'm doing with that. So things he'll say will kind of pop up. Like, he asked who the devil was because he heard a story. Or no, kids at a school were playing Demons and Angels. And I'm like, what?
Good heavens.
Is this game?
Like, take back the Holy Land?
Yeah.
First grade.
So he didn't know what's a demon. Like, because I don't push that on, sorry, religious people that are listening. I don't teach him that. And so I came at it from like an educational, I was just telling him what it is. What's the devil? All right. Well, some people believe it's this, you know, and so I come at it from that. But anyway, back what you were asking. Sorry.
I was going to say that's a perfect point, because your definition of a childhood understanding of the existential question we all have is, I have no idea.
Right.
Because like, I would have thought I would teach them just like I was taught. So it even though it's through your children, it is actually reminding you, oh, I have no idea what it means to be a child in a world where curiosity is okay, and we don't have the answers to those existential questions. Like, that is a huge reminder.
That's the thing. And I'm okay with being at the point where I don't know, and telling my kids all the time, like, question things. It's okay to not know. Look it up. Look the things you can. And my little 3-year-old son, who wasn't raised in the church at all, has no idea any of this stuff. So he was sobbing the other day because he's kind of starting into get into that point of like death. And doesn't quite understand it. It's really hard to explain to a three-year-old. So that whole existential crisis is really hard to deal with that. And I'm like, I used to have comforting words to be like, you know, we'll see our family. We know what happens. And now it's just crying with him. But on a lighter note, things that pop in my head are songs, primary songs, songs that we sang when we were kids, like in like nursery or primary. Yeah, I was like young. I will be outside or I'll sing. I'll just sing them and be like, oh, that came right
and then
back.
You go, oh, that's indoctrination.
Yeah.
Indoctrination.
Yeah, I changed just the like, words. I usually change them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Follow the prophet. Repeat it like 10 times. And
just
you're like, wow.
Blindly follow this man. And you're like, damn, mm-hmm. Since I was three, I've been singing to just follow someone without questioning it.
Yeah. The songs for me is a big thing.
Repetition. I mean, that's the best way to drill something into someone's brain. And I still do it too. I still remember the words of some of these crazy, crazy songs from back in the day. And the thing is about like the evangelical, all of it is like, God, we're pieces of shit. I can't believe you love me. Yep. Pour your blood on my soul. And it's like, this
so
is some
metal.
Whacked out emo shit. You
if
guys
you
are
literally
like,
took it and like changed a tambourine and an acoustic to an electric and like a heavy drum, those lyrics would go so hard. Like,
oh,
in, like,
and my mom would be like, it would have been the song my mom told me I wasn't allowed to listen
exactly.
to.
Even if it's like the verbatim.
It's about Jesus still,
words.
It would just like, they're saying nasty words and talking about blood and death and guts. I'm like, oh, it's a Christian song. Well, that's fine. That's perfect.
Oh, that's fine.
Well, it's Jesus. He bled for us.
Well, it's Jesus' like, blood. It's like, okay.
Jesus rocks.
Jesus
fucking rocks,
fucking
Matt.
Metal. I mean, he's like, you don't follow me, you're going
Jesus
to hell.
Jesus Christ superstar, holiday seasons, I think, are rough. Like, we think of, like, Jesus. It's Jesus season, so that, you know. Pops
he
up
is
a
the
lot.
Reason
Music,
for the season.
Right. Certain. Yeah.
Holidays for sure. Again, I do live in Utah. Very Mormon. Like, specific,
you,
like I know it's like,
do
oh,
you guys,
Christians.
Do you guys celebrate like Christmas now? Like just like,
oh
yeah. Christmas trees
yeah.
We love Christmas.
Ugly sweaters.
Oh yeah. I should have worn my ugly sweater Dungeons and Dragons shirt my brother bought me, but I forgot to put it on. Yeah. So yeah, it's very sexy. The women love it. They're like, oh, you're a wizard?
Yeah. I'm surprised you don't have five on you right now. It's amazing.
I did, but I left the church, so they're all gone. Yeah.
Gotcha. They decided to stay.
Yeah. They're waiting for you in the afterlife. Gotcha.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I live in Utah. I do have a lot of Mormon friends. And so a lot of stuff they post regularly, I'll see and I'll be like, oh, that's a really nice message. But then I read it from like a critical thinking side. I'm like, oh, you just hate everybody that doesn't believe what you believe. So stuff like that. Lawrence, I like songs. I think I was a missionary for 2 years. And for anyone that doesn't know what that means, like for like Mormons, like if you've seen the guys with like the white shirt and ties and the name tag, like those guys.
Geek
but
squad.
It's like a step.
Right. Gotcha.
Yeah,
but like I don't think people outside of the church like understand how devout those 2 years really are. Mm-hmm. It's like I was a monk for 2 years. I didn't I woke up at the same time every day. I went to bed at the exact same time every day. I read I studied the Bible and the Book of Mormon and what's called Preach My Gospel. It's like the Mormon missionary book to help you find and teach people. Every day at the exact same time. I lived in Ecuador for 2 years.
You speak Spanish?
I spoke Spanish exclusively. I wasn't able to go on dates. I wasn't able to call my family. I wasn't able
to. You can't touch women.
I couldn't
hug
them.
You can't swim in the pool.
Literally, there are so many rules. The rules are incredibly.
Oh, I thought you were saying you still, like James has no chance of touching a woman.
I don't. I can't swim and I can't touch women. I don't know how to. I've tried and they.
What is a woman?
Boobs are fake, honestly. And that you can write that down. write it down. for me,
taking notes. Hold on.
Go ahead.
Matt, did you get that?
I did.
Do you want me to put back the minutes here? So James says boobies are fake.
They are.
Run that back.
And they are a ploy by women to control men. And the moment you accept that they're
not
real,
you're not wrong.
They lose all control over you.
Not all conspiracies are false. Like there are such things as true.
Are men controlled?
Yeah. Here we
or
go.
Or women controlling.
Mind control. Or I mean, women. I'm just saying there's two
you
of
know
them.
What
am I they're supposed to do with
wonderful.
Two of them? That's twice the trouble. I mean, come on.
Boobs are like hypnotizing for both sexes. I think even straight women are like, titty.
Well, I love boobs.
Yeah, that's what
titties.
I'm saying.
Love
everybody loves boobs, truly. Sorry, what were we? Oh, my my religious trauma.
I don't know. I think we're starting a new religion. That's like tenet one, and that's the only one there needs to be. Everyone,
yeah, for sure. But think about how many decisions or you make, or the average man makes in his life based off of boobies.
Far too many.
Women too. Far too many. What shirt am I going to wear because of my boob? You know, there's right. There's
they have too much power. Let's just pretend they don't exist, and life would be better.
Oh God, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so again, back to religious trauma. I lived like a monk for 2 years, very exclusively. And you literally, your brain gets rewired when you live, wake up, go, sleep, wake up, go, sleep. And now when I hear certain things to this day, I'll be like, oh, well, that will be this lesson. This is how I would teach this. This is how I would explain this. Oh, this reminds me of a scripture from the Bible, Book of Mormon. Like, I hear things and automatically I go, well, this is how I would teach this to someone, to teach them the truth, right? Although I know it's not. I have it ingrained. I mean, I was, not to brag, I was a good missionary. I got along with people pretty well. I was able to explain things in a way that people could understand. And I feel like I did a pretty good job on it. I feel bad now that I'm tricking these people into something I didn't realize was...
You didn't know that, though. You didn't know.
You didn't know, and, you know, I don't feel bad. I don't, like, hate the people who are in this stuff. You know,
yeah.
I have strong feelings towards the people who are at the top, who are benefiting Tweeters. And know exactly yeah. what it is that they're doing. But, like, of all of the, I would say, like, churches and religions that go out and do missionary work, Mormons actually do some of the best stuff yeah. out of all of it, as oh, far yeah. as I'm concerned. Like, the yeah, least damaging as far as, like, the indoctrination, that's going to happen with all of them, but they're not trying to tell you there's only 100,000 spots in heaven. They're not trying to condemn right. you for right. every single thing you're doing in your life.
Right.
And let me, I do have one major question.
Yeah.
Where does the happiness come from? Because Mormons are the happiest fucking people I've ever seen.
We are.
And it seems real. Like, it seems
yeah.
real.
Yeah.
You know what
real.
It is? It's real for what you know it is. Okay, so when you're looking at life from this tiny little scope, it's not as scary. Like, you have answers to everything. You know where you're going. You have this roadmap planned. And this is just a classic member of the church. This isn't like Jack Mormons or anything.
Yeah.
So I think when you know all your big decisions are made, and you have to fit the mold. You have to be this. I'm not trying to be typical. Happy Mormons are typically white and they fit the mold of
straight.
You're going to have it easier straight. Right. Mm-hmm. And so those people are typically like,
so
it's
a
made,
white,
the religion's made for them.
Straight, cisgendered, somebody who doesn't have any kind of identity crisis.
Yeah.
It's going
right.
to be easy, but
yes,
for somebody
yes.
else, it might be tough.
Yeah. If you look at
an
members
attractive
of the church,
person. Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at people who are members of the church that are queer or that don't fit the mold, right, that Lauren kind of explained, the church is not a happy place, I will say. It is very internally hard because you're going, okay, well, I'm supposed to get married in this Mormon temple. I'm supposed to have kids. And then if I do that, I'll go to heaven. I'll be happy forever and ever and ever. But I don't want to marry someone who is of the opposite gender than me. I'm attracted to the same gender, which apparently is wrong and God doesn't like that. But yet if I don't do that, I'm going to go to like hell. Like, and so it's this internal conflict. So those members have a really, not all of them, but a lot of them have a really hard time yeah. with that happiness. Yeah. Whereas if you fit in that mold, it makes life way easier for you. I mean, the church didn't allow, Black members of the church to hold the priesthood, which is the church's way of saying they have like the authority of God, like literally God's actual authority that he has, members of the Mormon church can have, right, as men. And in the night up until the 1960s, it was white men. And so if you were a member of the church and you were African-American or, you know, and it also, it depended. Some Hispanics couldn't. If you were Brazilian, but you were you looked more Latino than they would let you. But if you were Black and from,
yeah,
it was very weird and picky choosy. Right.
But a lot of these things changed with like the civil rights movement.
That's
it
what I'm saying. So
what's going on? In
yeah.
the world.
And so at yeah. the time for them, it was like, okay, well, I have a hard time being a member of this church because apparently this is the only true church. And if I don't follow this specific church, I'm going to go to hell. Yeah. But also I'm not accepted completely. It's like, oh, but you know, it's up to God. So unless you're fitting that mold.
That still blows my mind though, because for all intents and purposes, you know, in church growing up in Catholicism and then evangelical churches, like I fit the mold. I was
exactly.
all, I seemed like all the things you're supposed to be, but I knew myself on the inside. And I'm like,
yeah,
these guys are walking around acting like they really got it. I'm not feeling whatever it is they're feeling. Uh-huh. If God knew what I was thinking about titties, then like,
and they'll control you.
Yeah. So like, I think for me, it was always an internal struggle that,
yeah,
I refused to fake it. So I'm like, I just, you know, so for me, it's still amazing that people are like, no, I understand this. And my brother over here, and we're all good, because I still would have been that kid going like, they don't know what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
They
did. Guilt with that. Yeah.
Many religions, not just Mormonism, will do is you play to your audience, right? So one thing Joseph Smith did well was he went, hey, you know, we think, because at the time, a popular belief outside of religion was, well, these Native Americans couldn't have made all these crazy, awesome things. They're dumb, right? They're lesser people. Yeah. And it's like, oh, that's horrible. We think that now, but no one wanted to accept that someone that wasn't white could do these things. So there was a scientific belief that it was this other primitive white nation that all had been wiped out because the darker skinned ones killed them. And Joseph Smith goes, I'm gonna write a fucking book about that, right? And he did. And it's like making it fit to who you are. Like religions in Asia, Jesus looks Asian. Religions in Christian religions in the Middle East, he looks a little darker, which makes a lot more sense, I should say. But then you look at Jesus here in Utah, and he's what I call white Jesus, because he's this dude with beautiful brown hair and blue eyes and white skin, and you're like,
he's an Abercrombie and Fitch model.
Yeah, you're like, I don't think that's what the Middle Eastern man in the year one would look like, but hey, I could be fucking wrong, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so changing it to look like the people around you so that people feel that connection to whatever it is definitely helps. And
yeah, people are okay with it until they realize like, oh, that becomes like Mein Kampf and eugenics.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Well, no, but it's not quite that, but you're kind of saying that you're not made in God's image.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they get offended when you try to like say, there's no way he looks like that. I mean, the dude lived in the Middle East, right? He was, he was Jewish in the Middle East in this time period. And they're like, I don't know. And I'm like, so you have a bit of racism.
You don't feel comfortable with him looking.
You don't
like
feel
that,
comfortable with a non-white Jesus. And that's an issue.
Yeah.
But you expect other people who aren't white to be okay with him being a white Jesus. So there seems to be a problem there.
Right. But like, I think a lot of people are so happy is like, I kind of touched on this, was like, why would you not be happy when you have the answers to everything and your roadmap everything is all planned out? What's not happy? And the whole Mormonism thing is very different. There's not a burning hell. It's very hard to, they have this outer darkness, but even the bad people, even Hitler, as horrible as doesn't go to a bad place like that. Like it's like this third degree heaven. So even that is like every part of it is
that's,
this happy.
That's huge. But that's, yes, that's
you don't
huge
have a burning
because
hell. So it is a beautiful picture. The church is a beautiful picture.
But you still have teenage angst. You know, absolutely. You're growing up, you're a young kid, you're trying to fit in with your peers just in normal sense. And like for me, it was always, you know, like this kid has it figured. Like I feel like I had imposter syndrome at a very young age.
Yeah.
But you know, as a kid, I just felt like, how do they know these answers? I don't know shit. Like I know how to say the right stuff.
Yeah, but do you believe it?
Yeah, and I never did. And that's why I thought like the one thing was taught, it was like God can see into your heart. And it was like, well, then God knows that I respect him about as much as I respect you guys on any given day, which is not a whole lot, you know? So
yeah, that's huge. Like I think that's always really impressive when children like you were like, I don't buy into this. Meanwhile, I think it's also certain people who are susceptible to joining clubs and by clubs, cults and stuff. Like for me, you can convince me of almost anything. Now, not so much because I'm very much like, let me find the data on that. But then, oh, for sure. I didn't ever question it. But for you, you did. And I think that's impressive.
Somebody was trying to tell me that a girl I was dating was trying to brainwash me and blah, blah, blah. And a close friend, and I don't know if this was meant as a compliment or not, but she was like, Matt is the last person I would ever worry about being like brainwashed or convinced. They're like, he's sooner to be a cult leader himself than to join a cult.
He's got told that.
That is a regular, weirdly enough, a compliment or whatever you want to call it that I get from people. They're just like, we'll be talking, hanging out, and then someone just go, dude, I don't know why, but you would just make the best cult leader in the world. I'm like, thank you. They're just like, you're just so charismatic, and I just want to like trust and believe you. I'm
like, you're lying through your teeth.
Like, go listen to Sort of Kind of Funny.
Boobs are not real. They're
not real.
Sure,
they're not.
Well, a lot of them aren't, but that's for another episode because I feel like we're running out of time.
Yeah.
So let's just real briefly talk into the present. James, you and I both are recently divorced. You've been back in the dating pool. And Lauren, did you marry your husband when you were still deep in it? Was he part
of it? Like as in as Mormon as you can go, but he wasn't as weird about it as we were, I guess is the only way to see. He was raised a little differently.
Yeah.
It's still very Mormon, but just different parenting, like, styles. It was a little bit more relaxed.
We were like raised Mormon, both in belief religiously and like the social norms.
Yeah. We would go to vacation spots that were like religious spots. Like we would perform in Nauvoo pageants for our family vacation, which is a church like site.
Orlando. Is it Orlando? I'm just kidding.
No, but
No, but
I love that.
James, what is dating like for you now? Because you are in the lion's den of Mormonism, right?
Yeah, the term that a lot of ex-Mormons use is Mordor, because they call it like the Mormon corridor, Mordor.
Yeah, but it just sounds like it's right out of Lord of the Rings. That's
exactly yeah. So yeah. it's like the evil place for Mormons, right?
But James was also married.
Yeah, sorry. So I
when super no, you're young, good, you're we're good. All married to Mormons. Yeah.
Yeah. So like the path Lauren was talking about earlier is for a man, you go on a mission for 2 years, you come home, you get married, right? No one gives a shit about what you do with your career and everything like that, as long as you're paying tithing to the church and that you get married. So I got home from my mission. I'm told by everybody, get married, get married, get married. They push you into churches full of other non-married Mormons just so they can marry each other off within the church, keep everyone Mormon, keep all the members Mormon.
That's
what
we
did. That are Mormon, right? So met my ex-wife at BYU. We got married and married for 5 years, I think, in total. She left the church as well. I left the church. The religion wasn't like a big issue in our marriage. I would say it wasn't like, oh, you're not Mormon, so we can't continue to be married. And then so we separated. No, it wasn't like a bad marriage or anything, just not made for each other, not a good relationship, right? And so now I'm not Mormon and I'm in a place dating where a lot of people are. And it's very, very strange because it's almost like on dating apps and when you go out or you talk to somebody, you have to almost like right off the bat be like, oh, I'm not LDS, by the way, or I am Mormon. Like people put that in like their dating bios and stuff like that. There's literally a dating app just for Mormon people. That's how
they want to match with their match. Yeah.
With their same beliefs, right? Which is definitely important to marry someone or date someone with the same beliefs as you. But like for Mormons, it's not even just like important. It's like literally salvation or eternal damnation.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, it's a bit of a big red flag for them.
I can't imagine it's fun being a guy dating in the Mormon world anyway, because you know, LDS ain't DTF kind of thing.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
That's why you get married so fast.
That's why Mormons get married very, very quickly. Yeah. Because they want to come together. Well, one of them will probably because, you know, never had sex and
until he finds out that titties aren't real. Like she takes her top off the first time. It's just
he's
nothing.
Like, fuck, you lied to me.
What was that illusion?
What is this? It's like a church. An important thing for me is actually trying to date someone who was Mormon. You talked about like having that trauma bonding thing. Being Mormon was such a big part of my life that like I talk about things very like regularly and openly about being LDS, and having that, not having to explain something to someone and they just understand what I'm saying, is a big thing to me. So I've gone out with people that were not Mormon. I've gone out with people that were, that are Mormon, that are like a little more nuanced. And then I've gone out with people that are ex-Mormon. And the ones that I definitely mesh the best with and they get along with the best are people that were members, because we can just talk about stuff and we just get it. We understand,
you know,
each other.
I didn't even think about that, but that is actually probably the best case scenario, mm-hmm. because you are there, because here, you know, you can't really tell if somebody has been, like, you know, in some kind of a like deep religion or a cult or something that comes up in mm-hmm. conversation. When it does, I agree with you 100%. Those have been the best experiences, even though those, you know, the relationships didn't necessarily go anywhere, but like right off the bat, again, you don't have to start on date one. It's almost like you're on your fourth date already.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, we're in the same, like we get that part.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's why when we talked with you a bit ago or whenever that was, it was immediately like, oh, we can talk to you. Yeah, like though we don't know anything besides that, we don't know anything about each other. You have this underlying like, gotcha. Like I get what you're saying. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah. So I think I can imagine with dating, like that's huge.
It's the ironic term. I've never really used it, but it's almost like when the Christians are always talking about being born again. It really is being born again, because you have all of these memories and the way that the world truly was to you. And then you have this new one and they're constantly butting each other's heads. Uh-huh. But it's like, oh yeah, that is a part of me. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
But it's I don't know. One day you wake up and your eyes open. You're like, oh my God, what the fuck?
It's my life.
If I meet someone that's not LDS, there's a high chance that they were LDS at one point.
Right.
And it definitely helps me to like,
or they're very familiar.
Or they're very familiar because they grew up, if they grew up in Utah, they know what all the terminology is, because the Mormon kids talk about it like everybody fucking knows what the hell they're talking about, because like, oh, this is reality. And you're like, well, for you, but that's not. So anyway, like you can use the word mission. Anyone that's lived in Utah knows what a mission is immediately. Like, oh, it's 2 years and da 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 da. So that's how dating is for me.
That's good, man. You have a captive market. I think at first I was questioning, you escaped and now you're still in Utah. And now I kind of get it, because there's an abundance on one side. Anywhere you go, the scales usually tip too many horny guys and too few women.
Yep.
And at least where you're at, it's like you have the right group.
Yeah.
And you're not in a city that has 8 billion people.
Yeah.
So that's actually,
and it helps. Yeah. It helps when you're like super funny and extremely attractive. I will say, personally speaking,
and humble
I'm just kidding, but yeah, it is.
He's not kidding.
I'm not kidding. But it does help though. I will agree.
I used to be a Mormon bro, but now I'm just like,
I'm just a Norman guy, you know?
They're like, bro, are you from Portland? Like, nah, man.
Nah. Portland,
I was going to say, if you ever do another relationship podcast, I would love to be a guest on that one.
Season 3, it's on.
Yeah.
It's on. Excited. Lauren, you can join too. You don't have to be single to be on it.
We met on Tinder. I mean, we were both Mormon. Left the church together. So that's nice. We have that in common and he gets all that. So that's fun going through that together.
So I said, I'm a curious person. I just found out today that there are Mormons on Tinder. Even the hardcore Mormons use Tinder. That's a free plug for you, Tinder. We'll take the promo code.
Boobs are fake.
Joseph Smith.
Going there.
So where can our audience check you guys out at?
So we are on all platforms where you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple Pods, all those things. At Sorta Kind of Funny. We have Instagram, TikTok.
Sorta Kind of Funny Pod.
Yeah, Sorta Kind of Funny Pod is Instagram and TikTok. Our podcast is just Sorta Kind of Funny.
Oh yeah, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so don't try to come at me like I don't know our podcast. Yeah, so Sorta Kind of Funny Pod on all social media, and Sorta Kind of Funny is the name of the podcast. Every Thursday, new episodes. Every first Monday of the month, we do a bonus episode, and that's like a little freebie for all of our listeners.
We love making jokes. We would love if you guys, would just take a gander. We're not for everyone. We are not for everyone. We get a little crass, but it's fun. And thank you so much. This has been a blast. I loved this. It's always great to talk And it feels so natural talking to some people. You have a lot of guests on, and I'm sure you get like, sometimes it doesn't mesh as well. And yeah. sometimes it's a little bit more forced, but you're a great host. Also, you have a great radio voice, podcaster voice. Yeah. I was gonna say, your voice is like perfect.
I could listen to you for hours.
Yeah. yeah.
We're ending the show now. I'm going out on that note.
Perfect. Fly high.
No, seriously, that was the nicest thing anyone's ever said. You know what? I'm going to delete all my dating apps and just put my voice out there and be like,
yeah,
listen, I'll talk you to sleep. I'll play with your hair.
First, I'll give you,
you should do like, you need to do like audio. What is it? Like reading books and like,
ASMR yeah. porn. Yeah.
yeah.
Get into the ASMR porn for sure.
We just went there. Now you can go to thegoingtherepodcast.com for links to all the podcast platforms, our socials, and of course, YouTube. While you're at it, give us a rating, share with a friend, and subscribe.
This podcast is made possible by its hosts and Frame One Media in association with Joe Calley and Bobby Thomas.